Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast and Happy New Year 1991. Yes, it's been an incredible slog, but here we are at the start of this new decade. Skateboards are in, people's hair is doing all kinds of weird shit, and everything is radical. Tom, are you excited for 1991?
I'm totally gnarly, radical, bodacious, baby, for it. Yeah.
Well, have you heard about this new film that's just come out called Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time? It looks totally bitchin'.
Oh man, that is tubular. They've made another Beastmaster? I cannot wait for that.
I can only assume that this movie is going to be timeless. That, 20 odd years from now, it will just still feel as fresh and as cutting edge as it does for us right now in the year 1991.
Yeah, man. I mean, the trailer for this bad boy that we just watched, it's got everything going for it. It kind of feels like it picks up where you want from a Beastmaster film, with some high fantasy swords and sorcery shenanigans. You got your boy Dar, still played by Mark Singer there.
He looks a lot more haggard.
Yeah, the late 80s was rough on that guy.
Yeah, and sorry, before we get too carried away, welcome listeners of 1991 to the second episode of this miniature lockdown season of the Bitter End Podcast, where we are talking about Beastmaster. Hopefully, if you're listening to this by this point, you will have already listened to episode one of this season, Beastmaster, which was from what year, Tom?
1982.
1982, so this is quite a long gap.
It is quite a long gap, and I'm not sure if this even came out as a cinema release. This might have been, in 1981, a straight-to-video release, maybe.
Now in the year that it is, yes.
Yeah, the last one, of course, was directed by Don Coscarelli.
Big Don.
Big Don. But we got this new one with a new director, Silvio Tabbitt. A quick glance at the works of Mr. Silvio is that this is his only directing credit.
Hooray!
And all his other credits are as a producer on a lot of other Beastmaster, like Beastmaster 3 and the Beastmaster TV series. But one directing credit is always a good thing. I feel that maybe Jaws 3, when we watched that, that was like the director's only thing.
Well, Thomas, it is the year 1991. This is his first film. I'm sure he will have a long, illustrious career. I can't wait to find out about his next film in 1992 or beyond. I'm sure there'll be many more just like it.
I mean, I don't know if a trailer has ever promised me more or given me exactly what I want from a trailer. This trailer is perfection for the kind of trailer that it is.
Let's be honest, guys, this movie does seem to be basically the only reason we picked this franchise. Because, yes, Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time, it starts exactly like Beastmaster 1. There's like a guy with a sword, and it even runs through all of the animals and gives you their ridiculous names. They're all back. And then inexplicably, there seems to be some dimensional portal that leads not just through time to the present day, 1991, but to LA, where there's some sort of like babelicious blonde in like angular pointy 1991 shoulder pads, and they're driving around in a sports car with his ridiculous hair in the wind and his shirt off.
The way they introduce it is amazing, saying that like Beastmaster is going to travel to the most brutal, uncompromising, hideous age that has ever existed. Hard cut, wailing guitar solos. It's like, welcome to Los Angeles! It's just like, and then it's just, Beastmaster disappears from the trailer for at least half of it, while we just have shots of radical 90s shit.
Yeah!
And I was just like, I probably should have stood up and given this trailer a round of applause, because it was exactly what I had hoped that this film would be. I think it even had, it looks like Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air might be in this.
Well, it was the year of Uncle Phil in 1991, right? It would have been his prime time.
Exactly. So Yeah, and then like it's suddenly at the end of the trailer, he goes, oh yeah, Beastmaster's meant to be in this. And he just kind of comes up and goes, hey, this isn't like California Man 2 or something like that. This is actually a Beastmaster film. Let's not get derailed. So I'm absolutely pumped for this.
Yeah, and the baddie looks quite bad, like in a good way. He looks, you know, he's kind of reminding me of one of those, like, one of the many good Highlander baddies that we had.
He does look very Highlander, which is funny because at some point there's like a cop who kind of says to him, hey, Darth Vader, where you going? And I mean, he doesn't look anything like Darth Vader. He looks like something out of Highlander. And then like some like radical chick goes, you need to get yourself some new threads, man. I cannot deal with this. This is going to be, I hope this is as good as this promises to be.
Well, Tom, there's only one way to find out, and that is to slam headfirst against the brick wall that is Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time from the year 1991.
Well,
but first,
should we find out maybe what the people in the future might think of this film?
Oh, yes, okay.
So I'm predicting what the people in the future in the year 2020 will post about this on something called the internet on IMDb. It's the IMDb guessing game. Now, let's see. The Beastmaster number one got a 6.2, just to refresh your memory. And that's a decent score. And it was a pretty fun movie. Now, this obviously looks like the Citizen Kane of the 90s. So, Todd, what do you think that this has got on IMDb?
Well, Tom, the year is 1991. I'm 8 years old. There's not really, you know, there's not really a lot that can dampen my enthusiasm for something like this. So I'm going to say a straight up 6.0, six on the nozzle.
Man, I like your moxie, kid. You're going to go far in this decade. It's actually a 4.1, which just seems rigged to me because this just looks too good.
Yeah, you know what? I was interested before. Somehow that has made me a lot more interested. Like a 4.5 is way more interesting than a 6.
4.1.
4.1. Sorry, 4.1. Even lower. 4.1 is way better than a 4.5.
It tastes so good.
Oh, that hurts so good.
Oh, it's like Tab or whatever. It's like clear crystal Coca-Cola that we have in 1991, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we're going to have to get bodacious, slam in that VHS.
Keep it radical, my dude.
Don't forget to rewind.
In a dark and distant age, a lone warrior with mystical powers.
Master of the Beast.
And the creatures he commands. Rue, his strength. Kodo and Podo, his thieves. And She-Ra, his eyes. They will challenge the forces of a brutal tyrant.
Did you actually believe that you and your flock of peasants could overthrow my kingdom?
But the battle for the fate of their world,
with threat of such a weapon, I could rule unopposed,
will lead them to another.
The ultimate power awaits you, my lord.
A dimensional portal, the doorway to your ultimate triumph.
To the most barbaric land that time has ever known.
This is Los Angeles, most awesome place in the universe.
Yo, Darth Vader, what is this, some kind of movie set?
You gotta get yourself a fresh thread. Rock and roll, baby. Whoa.
How come a clean-cut jungle boy like you is hanging out with a creep like this?
This geek is really trying to get the bomb.
The world is mine!
Mark Singer returns in Beastmaster 2, Through the Portal of Time.
I never thought I'd say this, but take me back to the year 2020. I miss it so much. I don't want to be in 1991 anymore.
But it's so gnarly and rad here, baby. Oh.
I tell you what, a little 1991 goes a long way. An hour and a half of 1991, that is a little bit more than I can take.
I mean, the amount of 1991 that they use in Beastmaster 2 is definitely not a little. It's a lot of things, namely a lot.
Yeah.
Watching this film, I was like, not since Highlander 2, The Quickening, has there been a film that has so fundamentally misunderstood what the first film was about, and yet I'm totally here for it.
Yeah, now don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the movie for sure. I just, it just made me very thankful for what I have.
Yeah, it's like, oh man. It, like, the trailer was right. It was a barbaric time.
So listen, listeners, thank you for coming back to us. We hope everything's all right with you. This is going to be slightly tricky, at least for me, because, you know, everything's gone a little bit topsy-turvy lately, as you know. And I have not just come off the back of watching this film. I watched this film about a week and a half ago, and Tom and I have only been able to make time to do this recording now. Tom, how long ago did you watch the film?
Since 1991, baby, it feels like. I don't know, about the same. It's a little bit hazy, but, you know, it's Beastmaster 2. I think we can piece this motherfucker together. I mean, thankfully, the film sets the scene, because, like, quite a lot of time had taken place between this and the first movie, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of release dates. But this, you know, kicks off with some classic text on screen.
The evil King warlord Arklon has enslaved the people of Arok. All right, cool.
Cool. Is that the world that we were in last time? I don't know if it ever came up. Whatever. Okay, great.
Yeah. And then, exactly, drops us in the mix with this, like, the thinnest of backstories.
Well, it says King Zed is dead, baby. Who was Dar the Beastmaster's dad in the first film. Yeah. But, like, he died. That was not the ending of the film. He died, like, at some point in the third act, and it was left that Dar had that younger half-brother. Like, Dar could have been king, but then this other kid was going to go and be king instead. But the film's going, whoa, 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 whoa. You didn't watch the Beastmaster 1 very recently, so the king is dead. There's no other heir to the throne. Dar is now the leader of a rebel force fighting against Arklon, who's been the big villain all along, and Rip Torn, also known as Max from the last film, was just working for him.
The warlord Arklon looks like a camp Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, kind of like that. I got a lot of who was the bad guy in Highlander 2? Michael Ironside. He's got a budget.
It would begin with a K.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah. But like the actor, he's got like a very like Michael Ironside. He's like, he's all teeth. Played by, the guy's name is Wings Hauser, which the fucking,
that is such a sick name. I really wish my name was Wings Hauser.
If I was named Wings Hauser, I'd be walking like, so what's the name of the bad guy I'm playing? Arklon. No. His name's Wings Hauser. And
if my name was Wings Hauser, I would want for nothing in the world except to tell everybody what my name
exactly
was.
If
my name was Wings Hauser, then I would get a tattoo on my face that says, look down at my hands, and then on both of my hands it would just say Wings Hauser.
Excellent. Yeah.
If my name was Wings Hauser, I would buy a restaurant and call it Wings Hauser's restaurant, and all of the food would be alphabet spaghetti that would just spell out Wings Hauser on every dish.
I thought it would be Wings Hauser's House of Wings.
Fuck you. See, this is why I don't get to be Wings Hauser.
Exactly. I'm going to miss that one. That was like a fucking barn door you could have hit. Anyway, so Dar has been captured by Wings Hauser. And he's all like, so this is the legendary Beastmaster. You look much older than you did in the last film, the events of which took place maybe a week ago. Anywho, time for you to die. And then Dar is instantly rescued by, you know, all his old mates. There's the tiger that they've, for health and safety reasons, have not painted black this time. There's his hawk and Kodo and Podo, the The ferrets. Even though one of them died, and he's obviously, it's a real Snowball 2 kind of situation. Like, whichever one died, they're just like,
she remarried. Kodo remarried.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, and we'll call you this, call you the same name.
But this is extra complicated because at the end of the last film, it implied that the ferret was now in a romantic relationship with the black tiger. But now the black tiger is gone, replaced with an orange tiger. And Kodo has married a new ferret.
A lot's happened in the week since the events of the first film. But Dar escapes. He's going to be put to death.
Yeah, the animals come to his rescue. There's a really good bit where one of the bad guys is riding his horsey, and the horsey like rears up, and the bad guy like falls off his horse, and in falling stabs himself in the chest with his own sword.
It's pretty good. That's, you know, that's why Dar's the Beastmaster. He has the power to spook horses. And then, oh, Arklon gets knackered in the face by that hawk. It kind of gives him a good kind of good old scratching. He's angry, obviously. He wants Dar caught. There's a lot of running, a lot of chasing. And then
we cut to the witch, baby.
The witch. Oh, yes, the witch.
Because this movie has a witch as well. Now, there's some issues with this witch. Because this witch is scripted the same way that, like, the makers of any of the Home Alone films would script, like, the sassy young child. This witch just, like, randomly says pieces to camera. Like, a guy gets stabbed and she turns to the camera with a, like, hand on a hip and goes, "He got the point."
Yes.
It's like, you're a fantasy medieval witch. What the fuck are you talking about? I wrote down in my notebook, "I guess he got the point. Fuck you."
Yeah, it's quite jarring, and there is a reason why she talks like this later on, but like it's instantly this very tonal shift from like talking in like high fantasy talk to her like essentially like continuously commenting about her boobs and how everyone likes her boobs and essentially looking at the camera and going, check please. It's like very much that kind of character.
But she
like,
says at one point, she also says, "Chill out, Lord Dude."
Yeah. This is the point where you're like, something's up. Something's up. Something is heading towards a portal through time, I imagine. and basically, like, she's been captured by some... This week's been captured by some local resistance fighters or something like that. And then Arklon shows up, murders them all with his weird laser wand and loads of polystyrene boulders that fall over everybody.
Yeah, he's got the key of Magar. Which is, like... It's a laser gun. He's got a shooty sci-fi laser gun.
It's quite weird, isn't it? And he doesn't hold it like you would hold a wand. He doesn't point at it. This isn't like some, you know, like wizard pointing a wand. He holds it face forward. So it's like pointing like horizontal. it's like vertically.
Like Gandalf.
Yeah.
Like when Gandalf like rides along and he's holding it aloft like a torch and then he can kind of just direct it like
yeah,
that.
But it just zaps
but it
lasers.
Just looks a bit silly. And he's also, because he got knackered in the face by the hawk, he's now got a Phantom of the Opera mask. And I'm kind of starting to like this guy. And I didn't even know yet that his name was Wings Hauser.
Right. You should taste his wings. They're fucking banging. But he, Arklon, he's like, "I like you, sassy witch. You amuse me. Ha ha. I will kill you. Ha ha." And so he's got a witch now. And then we cut to Dar, who is now, after being in the desert, is suddenly in a very dense swamp.
Yeah, he's in some spooky woods. He gets attacked by a crazy troll monster with laser eyes and they're fighting and the troll monster's like, "I'll fuck you up, Dar. I'll fuck you up. I'm a crazy troll monster." And then in the middle of the fight, the troll monster goes, "Hang on a minute. Aren't you my nephew?"
It's because she sees that like burnt mark on his hand, which gets him out of any bad situation. He just like goes, "Look at my hand." Yeah, he's got a monster.
And yes,
aunt.
Reader, the troll is his aunt who partook of forbidden rituals and got turned into a troll and now lives in the swamp fucking people up unless they have like a scar that might suggest that they're a blood relation. And she's like, "Oh yeah, mate, you've got a secret brother and you've got to find him and kill him before the autumn equinox." No idea why. don't know. The screenwriters didn't explain why, but you've got to do it before then.
Yeah, you've got to kill your brother. I wonder who it could be. She's basically the exposition troll. She kind of comes in and fills in, like, the backstory about, like, how Dar was born inside a cow and all this fucking weird shit.
What a weird way to do it. Why did she have to be a troll? And if they're already starting the movie with text on the screen, just fill this shit in with text on the screen. Like, you don't need to invent this whole business with, like, an aunt troll who's, like, cursed because of forbidden rituals that she... Like, does she eat babies? Like, what does she do?
I don't know.
To make her into a troll? I want to see that movie.
Yeah, I love
like,
auntie troll.
Don't tease me. Yeah.
I think she's great. I hope there's, like, a... I hope she appears in the Beastmaster TV series. Anyway, so... Then we go back to Artclon and the witch, and she's like, Artclon, I can make you super powerful, bruh. Come and check out my totes rad portal. And she goes to this like stone archway and shows him images of LA in 1991. And this is how she's obviously been like, she can't go through, but she watches it like she's watching television. And this is why she talks like a totally rad dude.
Now, I've got beef with this. It's a portal through dimensions. It is absolutely not a portal through time.
Yep. No.
There's nothing to suggest that they're traveling through time, which means two things. It means, number one, that in the world of Arok, or Arak, or whatever the world is called, the year is 1991, which I quite like. This is their 90s period
right,
as well.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, fucking producers of this film gave the movie the wrong name. It is absolutely not through the portal of time. Nobody goes through a portal of time at any point in this movie.
Yeah, they go to another, like a parallel dimension or like parallel world. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Through the dimensional gates,
yes.
They should have called it, or something like that. Or Beastmaster 2 Lost in LA.
Yes, exactly.
Call it that.
Yes, Beastmaster Lost in LA would be much better. So she's like, right, we're gonna, what we wanna do, Artclon, is we want to go into LA and we want to get a neutron bomb, and then you can bring that back here and use that to rule the world, which you already seem to kind of rule anyway.
Now, would there have been neutron bombs in LA? I can think of like five or six other cities much more likely to have neutron bombs in them than fucking Tinseltown.
It's not
like, why is there a nuclear bomb there,
right?
Yeah, wouldn't there be one in like, oh, I don't know, like New Mexico, where they do actual bomb tests and things like that?
Yeah, you wouldn't have them be like, right, we're developing this like bomb in like this massively populated, you know, like super densely populated area where like if there's something goes wrong, whoopsie.
Yeah.
There goes the entertainment industry.
But at least it's close to Shake Shack, right?
Right, I don't fucking... but there's this great moment where, like, Artclon is totally sold on this. He's, like, got a taste for the big city lights. He's like, come, let us learn more about this L.A. And then we cut to, like, a montage of scenes going on in L.A. And it's obviously ushered in by a wailing guitar solo. It's like...
Come, let us discover more about this place you call L.A.
Cars driving down the fucking freeway. It's everything I could have hoped for in a fantasy barbarian film that introduces L.A. It's exactly how I imagined it was going to go. It was... Fuck, we just go like, right, now here's another character. Here's Jackie. She's Senator Trent's daughter. She's a little bit much.
She is a little of a lot much. I really, really also enjoyed the hard cut to LA with its wailing solo. But like, as soon as Jackie starts to do anything, I have this really nasty feeling in the pit of my stomach of like, oh God, no. Oh God, I think I hate Jackie and I think she's the heroine.
Yeah.
And she is fucking horrendous. She's driving really fast in this sports car. She calls up her dad, who works for the military, by the way, and she says,
hi, Daddy, this is Jackie.
My daughter?
Yes, your daughter.
My daughter? Okay, clearly established. That's a weird exchange. And then
that's
the other
great
thing is she's just like, she's driving along. She's getting chased by the cops because she's speeding. She's forgotten it's her sister's wedding. So she's got to get to her sister's wedding. She doesn't give a fuck. She's like, the wedding is like, they're tying the knot in 20 minutes. So she's like steaming across town. doesn't give a fuck. And there's a point with the cops like wailing the sirens and being like, please pull over, you're being incredibly reckless and people are going to get hurt, where she looks into the camera and she literally says, I am so cool.
Yeah, it's a lot.
No, Jackie. No, you are not. I hate you, Jackie. I hate you.
The human female equivalent of Rude Dog from Rude Dog and the Dweebs. Like, she's just like so over the top 90s attitude. It's just like, if you thought that The Witch talked in like kind of like crazy 90s, like, this is the way that like they write this on, that anyone that is in 90s LA, like, they all talk in fucking like wisecracks per second. Like, it's a fucking lot with her.
Yeah, it is a huge amount of a lot. But then instantly she gets her comeuppance because she's in this high speed chase with the cops and she slams into a brick wall with the car because she's too busy like wisecracking into the camera and not looking at the road. Slams into a brick wall through the dimensional portal. That would have killed her if there wasn't a dimensional portal there. That would have been a very different movie. But no, she's all right. She slams through into the world of Arok.
Some cops follow. They get blown up by Arklon's minions and the cops run back through the portal, not through time. And Jackie just drives her sports car into the middle of like a pitch black desert until she runs out of fuel and is stopped. I mean, and then she just is wandering around going like, wow, what is this? You know, she doesn't really think that anything is particularly wrong. You know, like, everything's just kind of very blasé. She's basically like, I don't know, maybe the most like entitled epitome of like white privilege like in a film I've ever seen. She's just like, oh, the world will just like fucking deal with my shit.
I guess driving headfirst into a brick wall can't kill me. Maybe I'm immortal. I'd always suspected. Anyway, what's for lunch?
So she just like, yeah, goes driving around and bumps into Dar
with the tiger, and they have a very, very long conversation around a campfire. And then, Tom, I'm wondering if you can help me with this. I've just written down at this point in my notebook, with an exclamation mark at the end, the Lost Hounds!
Oh, this is another thing like Swamp Aunt, who, where there's a bit where like it's late at night and then the silhouettes of these, what I think are obviously dogs, they've put dragon outfits on. You know, they look like demon dogs, but like they're all, it's like lit in silhouette, so you can't really tell how janky it is. And like Dar's like, look out, demon dogs, or whatever, the Lost Hounds, they're here to like drag the souls of, you know, of sinners down into the depths. And you know, Jackie's like, oh, sounds like a guy I dated once. Yeah, am I right? And then Dar's like, I will go and deal with these hounds. And he just kind of runs off. That's it. It's like one of those things like they did in like the first one where like, kind of like, hey, here's some cool fantasy shit, but let's not worry about that. This is all set dressing. This is all like, it's like world building without really world building. It's like, hey, imagine all the cool shit that could be going down. There's these like demon soul eating dogs over here, but let's stick with Jackie wandering around trying to, you know, find a 7-Eleven so she can get some gas.
Yeah, it's like the fucking guys, the birdmen with the skin cloaks, the winged devourers from the last film. They keep introducing really cool shit, and then you get it for about 30 seconds and they go, right, that's too expensive for us to have much more of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're like, oh, I don't know, look, one of the dogs has put my coat on. That kind of looks fun. Let's film that for a few seconds.
But then Arklon arrives with a bunch of smoke bombs and his soldiers steal Jackie and take her to LA so that, because they think that she can help them get the neutron bomb because of her dad. Is that what it is?
Kind of, yeah. I think they're going to, yeah, like she kind of makes a deal, doesn't she? And she's like, oh, my dad can totally help. And then Dar's going to go through the portal as well to go and rescue her, right?
Like, yeah, all, I guess
everybody,
so.
You know, like, it's getting too expensive to film in this desert, wherever it is. So everyone relocate to LA.
He doesn't seem to particularly like her. He just is going to save her, I suppose. Maybe it's more because by this point he's worked out that Arklon is his brother because they both have the same scar on their hands.
He works that out once they get through the portal. So he kind of likes her. Basically, like, Dar, this is like a big change in his personality. Like, between this film, like the last film and this film, Dar stopped being a perv. Like, remember
I forgot about how pervy he was.
He was just down, wanted to get his fuck on, like, the whole time. But, like, in this one, he's just, like, very platonic and just kind of, like, chuckles at everything she says. He's like, ha, 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 this strangely dressed wench has clearly got brain damage. Ha, ha, ha. Better go save her, I guess. Ha, ha, ha. He just does this kind of, like, the reaction to at least 50% of anything that is said to him is this kind of gentle fake laugh. Like a kind of like He-Man at the end of an episode of He-Man, the kind of ha ha ha, Orko, idiot. Yeah. But like Jackie is Orko, I guess. and so, yeah, they go through the portal. They find out that Arklon and Dar are brothers, and then Arklon sets fire to some shit, and it means that Dar gets trapped in this alleyway.
Yeah.
And then the police come to go and arrest Dar, and they get arrested by Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, it is indeed Uncle Phil, and my favourite actor in the entire film. I don't know the actor's name, but there's Uncle Phil's like assistant is a cop called Bendowski.
Oh, now, he's great.
I cannot get enough Bendowski. Now, again, talk about world building. Bendowski is the fucking weirdest fantasy character I've ever seen, and he's playing an LA cop. Number one, he doesn't wear a uniform at all. Number two, he's about 3.5 feet tall for no reason. They've cast like a really, really, really short actor, which is fine. Good on him for being short. I just don't think he'd be a cop. And then also, he's wearing braces and a shirt like he's in like a kind of a 1940s music hall comedy.
And a bow tie.
And a bow tie. He's got a bow tie with his braces. And he's got a really funny moustache and a really cool voice. And I just love Bendowski.
Again, I want to see the Bendowski spin-off series to explain how this man made Detective.
Yeah. and he's amazing.
It's quite fun when, like Uncle Phil shows up and it's like, oh, cool. Like, this is going to be a character that we're going to get to see a lot more of. No, not particularly. Like a little bit. He doesn't do anything particularly interesting. But, you know, the thing is, we are now in LA and we get... what do we get? We get
a great scene where Arklon has to go buy some clothes because people are staring at his medieval getup.
Everyone's like, whoa, what's up, Darth Vader? And it's like, I mean, swing and a miss? That's not like...
He goes into this, like, Rodeo Drive, like, high fashion outlet and meets a guy who runs the shop who's basically Serge from the Beverly Hills Cop movies and starts to try on, like, these crazy high fashion clothes. And then we just get this weird, like, gratuitous montage where he's using his magic wand to blow open the doors to all the changing rooms just so that we get little glimpses of women in their underwear. And it goes on forever.
It goes on for so long. This kind of like played for laughs scene of Arklon and the witch going clothes shopping with like a lot of time spent on this flamboyant shop owner with an indeterminate accent. And it's just the thing was like, okay, like, I don't know. Like, they're like, right, we're going to go for this like weird fish out of water thing. But like they're leaning into it really hard. And it's like, okay, guys, this skit feels like it should have been a few minutes, not like 10.
Yeah,
like,
and it would have been better with Dar, I guess, instead of Arklon, because this is meant to be the big villain who's like having these wacky hijinks.
I know. Like, this thing, like, they're kind of going for this, like, okay, fantasy people in LA, what are they going to do? They're going to, like, go shopping, go to somebody's house. That's it. Like, there's not, like, a lot of, like, these big misunderstandings turning into... like genuinely funny comedy or like really cool action sequences where we mix like fantasy with like real world, you know, like modern day terrain like that. So we then get Dar he escapes from jail from Uncle Phil and Bendowski and then gets picked up by Jackie. She just happened to be driving outside the police station exactly the right time. She didn't know that he'd been arrested. And she just like rocks up like, oh, hey, man, get in.
LA is the kind of small, cozy town where you can just bump into people when you need to. You know, it's one of those real everybody knows your name sort of places.
Right. And then she
teaches him the word asshole.
Yes,
which he finds very enjoyable. And then they drive past a cinema that's advertising a screening of Beastmaster 2, The Portal Through Time.
Yeah, and Dar goes, what?
Which implies that A, he knows what a cinema is. B, he is aware of the existence of Beastmaster 1.
Yes, and that he knows, like, Beastmaster 2, The Portal Through Time, but that's what I'm in right now. Like,
yeah.
It's a horrible fourth wall break. And this all takes place within another, like, montage of just shots of LA and people fucking rollerblading and eating tacos and stuff like that, as Jackie drives down going like, LA is like the best place in the world. And it's just like, you're padding, aren't you? You're just padding.
Meanwhile, we get to see a little glimpse of Arklon's, like, evil plan, because he is kind of seducing this drunk soldier that he meets so that he can then steal his memories. And luckily enough, this soldier happens to have keen knowledge of exactly where the neutron bomb is located. And he uses those memories to go and go and get it.
And he wipes his mind. It's like, man, you should have done this earlier. Like, I mean, why did you keep Jackie alive?
Yeah, if you could just steal.
I mean, I guess you did. I guess he didn't. I guess he knew, like, whatever is going on inside that head, I do not want it in mine. We then get a scene where Jackie goes back to her, like, huge palatial mansion that she lives in.
Yep.
And there's, like, her butler who.
Wendell.
Yeah, when he came in, I fucking snapped into focus. I was like, okay, it's an actor called Arthur Mallett. And I was like, okay, who is this guy? I know this guy. I know he's got a really distinctive voice. He was in Hook. In the movie, Ooh. He's Tootles in the movie Hook, like one of the lost boys who's like gone and like gone back and like is, seems kind of crazy. He's also Mr. Dawes Jr. in Mary Poppins, which is one of my favorite films ever. Like, he plays Dick Van Dyke's son in that. And he's also a voice in the Don Bluth animated film, The Secret of Nim. These are all very, very niche cuts. But for me, I was like, this motherfucker.
These are like Tom Denny greatest hits.
This film is shaping up. Like, we've got, you know, fucking Wings Hauser. We've got Bendowski. We've got Uncle Phil in here. We've got this geezer out of Mary Poppins. And I think even, like, as much as she's a terrible, terrible character, we both realise that Jackie, the actress who plays Jackie, is in one of the Hellraiser films.
Yeah.
Like, one of the most brutal snuff film-like Hellraiser films.
Yeah, I think it might be Deader, if any of you, yes. any of our listeners have seen Hellraiser Deader. Not the best one, definitely not one of the worst either. So yeah, that's pretty amazing. And then there is also a moment coming later on where there is an actor who kind of scratches a similar itch for me as this okay. Wendell actor has scratched for Tom.
I think I might know who that might be. Anyway, yeah, we get this like scene. It's like Dar like watching a television and be like, my God, a television. This is sorcery. It's like, but you do actually come from a world with sorcery. Your aunt is a giant fucking swamp monster. Your half brother has a laser wand. You can control beasts with your mind. You were born out of a cow. Television does not maybe seem like quite such a fucking.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, he's looking at the
Be
food.
More flexible in your mindset, yeah?
Yeah, he's looking at, like, you know, like, LA 91 food. And it's like, my God, this food is so colourful. It's like.
It's salad.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, do you remember in the last one where you were saved by, like, fucking hooded flesh bird men? Like. What do you get amazed by?
Yeah, well, he gets amazed by seeing the words Beastmaster 2 on a cinema when he drives past.
And he gets to hear rock and roll. She starts playing rock and roll to him, and he's like, rock and roll. Oh, God.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, we get to see Arklon and the witch bimbling around the army base that they've now found the location of. And there's a really weird, like, abrupt cut. And I don't know if this is meant to be a joke or if they just didn't think it through. But they're talking about how they're going to, like, gain access. And one of them says, I don't need any badges to get in here. They're talking about badges. He goes, badges? I don't need badges. And then there's an abrupt cut. And then the next shot, they're using badges to get in.
Yeah, I think it's kind of an editing gag, but
it doesn't work. Like, for that, they're like because that's the bicycle joke, right? It's the classic thing. It's called the bicycle joke, where somebody goes, "You'll never get me on that bicycle," and then in the next shot, they're riding the bicycle.
Yeah.
It's a classic visual gag. But this doesn't really work as the bicycle joke. Badges, I don't need badges. And then in the next shot, he's using the, like, that would only work if he's like, I don't need badges. And then in the next shot, they're being like, I'm sorry, Archlon, you're going to have the badge. Something like that.
Yeah.
That's the joke. But not just, I'm using them and it works. And they get it.
Yeah. It wasn't one of the film's biggest zingers. I'll give you that. they eventually do go and steal the neutron bomb.
Thanks to the power of badges.
Archlon does a runner. He dumps the witch out.
Yeah, because he steals her memories as well and figures out that she was planning to kill him all along.
Dodoy. So then she like jumps into a car with Jackie and Dar and is like, radical dudes. After that, bozo. And off they go. They go back to the alleyway to try and go through the portal of definitely not time. And then they don't.
The witch has this cool line. Well, no, not a cool, a cool air quotes line. Archlon is like trying to kill her now. He wants to like get her and he's threatening to cleave her bosom, as in like stab her heart. But she says, why does everybody always want to cleave my bosom? If you ask me, my bosom cleaves fine by itself.
Okay.
Kinda? Like,
yeah. So then we get...
There's a lot Archlon of weak source gags.
Yeah. We get Archlon and Dar fighting in an alley. Archlon does a runner. Dar
over the rooftops, like a little nimble kind of ninja guy.
Yeah, Dar does some swinging off of a crane that Jackie kind of pilots. Uncle Phil shows up and kind of just shrugs and goes, oh, I'm getting too old for this shit. And they don't catch
anyone.
Yeah, and
Uncle Phil's being advised about the neutron bomb by a general. They got this general in and they're like, the bomb's gone missing. What can you tell us about it? And this general is like so fucking nonchalant about this bomb. They're like, so what's going to happen if the bomb goes off? Because we understand it's going to go off in 2 hours. And he goes, kablooey, world ended, basically. And he's just as chill as that. He's like, well, if you don't get it in 2 hours, kablooey.
Yeah, he's just like this, he's just like a weird, befuddled old man. He's like, you know, like a super senior military guy who's just completely lost his fucking marbles. But it's very weird. And he like plays a very pivotal point, like, you know, near the end of the film. It's like, huh, okay, I guess. Archlon runs away and ends up in a zoo for some reason, which, I don't know, if he knows anything about his brother, is a stupid fucking idea.
yeah, good point. And then during this, Dar uses the power of his hawk's eyes to like find out where Archlon is, and he's saying, "Oh, I can see that Archlon is traveling through a leafy green area." And Jackie goes, "I know where that is," and is able to like directly lead them straight to Archlon, because in all of LA there could only be one leafy green area.
Yep, and that's the zoo where when Dar got arrested, they took his tiger there. So he gets reunited with his tiger, and like a load. There's, I'm not sure if it's like an earthquake or just Archlon using magic, and like there's a big kind of earthquake, the ground splits open, flames come out of the ground, all the animals kind of break out their cages, and they kind of surround Archlon and Dar in this kind of display area in the zoo, which would be like where you would go and watch an animal show. Like, and they have their big fights, their sword fight, while there is like a pre-recorded thing, like, and now you can see the tiger, you know, like this, like, weird spiel.
Well, Jackie actively goes out of her way to turn on all of the like rock concert light show.
Yeah.
She like they're having this fight. She runs over to the mixing desk, presses some buttons so that this like crazy light display can come on.
Yeah, and there's this weird
fuck you, Jackie.
And there's this
fuck you.
There's this weird monologue going over the top, which would accompany an animal show and would be telling the audience what these animals are and making light jokes about, you know. It's kind of, they're trying to play it for laughs that like, oh, these animals would normally, you know, be predators in the wild, but here they're best friends. But yet actually Dar and Archlon are having a fight. And it's like, huh, okay, yeah. But this is your final battle and you're like completely undercutting it with like no dramatic music, but with circus music and like this weird like bit of like pre-recorded stuff from an animal show. It's such an odd choice to like just like, it's like, why does this not feel like anything? It's like, oh, because they've made it wrong, basically. It's like,
oh, it's because they're bad at their jobs.
Yeah, yeah, it's really odd. And then, Archlon gets thrown in slow motion into this flaming hole in the ground. That's it. He's dead. Okay, fine. And then Uncle Phil and shows up with the befuddled old general, and they all just kind of stand around while this bomb is like nearly about to explode. They're all like, "Oh God, jeez." It's like when you're standing behind someone in a queue who just like won't hurry up, and you're just like, you know, kind of just trying to like passive aggressively make your annoyance known. And this is like, yeah, this befuddled old man trying to put his reading glasses on and be like, "What's the password?" Beep, boop, boop. And it's like, this is the end of the film. This is how it ends, with like this comedy, like switching off of a bomb. And it gets stopped at 1 second.
Yep.
Okay.
Very unpredictable. That really, because for a minute there, I did actually think that the bomb was going to go off and the entire world would be destroyed. I was pretty convinced that was what was going to happen. So
here's hoping.
You know, they kind of span me out.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, like, actually, we've been talking about this. We've spoken about, like, Dar the Beastmaster very little, because he doesn't really make very much impact in this film. He is, like, by far the least interesting character and has, like, the least amount of lines out of anybody. And I don't know why. I don't know why.
If anything, his character arc actually runs backwards in this, because you know how he leaves it with Jackie? They're saying goodbye. She's staying in LA. He's going back through the portal through not time. And he gives her his ferrets. He's just like, "Do you want these ferrets? I don't fucking want them. They're like super annoying.
Yeah.
Do you just want to have these ferrets?" And she's like, "Yeah, of course. Of course." What like 1991 like party girl doesn't want a couple of fucking ferrets?
Right.
Give me those stanky things.
Yeah. I'm going to hide cocaine in these.
I just do not think he would give his ferrets away after all they've done for him.
Well, he's probably just like, "I'll probably just get some fucking new ones in like the next scene anyway." Like, as far as
they'll have like laser eyes or something.
Yeah, like as far as Dar is concerned, ferrets, like, he's never without ferrets. Like, it doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'll probably just have some in Beastmaster 3 for some reason. They'll have the exact same name.
Yeah. I'm keeping my hawk and my tiger because those are actually good, but you can have the ferrets.
The hawk nearly died in this one. That was a kind of like, "Oh no, not the hawk." Oh, it's fine.
It's fine. And then he disappears back through the portal of not time. It closes behind him. And then she looks at the wall, and the wall has got like a poster on it for a theme park called Adventure Island. And the sign glows blue. Does that mean anything? Because it was fucking over my head. I have no idea what that meant.
No.
Why does Adventure Island glow blue?
I don't know. I have no idea. I missed that. I mean, what also...
Is it because she had an adventure?
Maybe. I mean, you know what also happened? When, like, the finale was happening and Arkwan goes to the zoo, Jackie says to the witch, "Go and find my dad. Here's my... He's a senator. Here's our address. Take this car or whatever. Go and find him." And... You know, like the witch is like, senator, you know, not bad. Maybe not, you know, like the unholy ruler of all existence, but I'll bang him. She never shows up again. I mean,
yeah.
And you know,
she's just out there.
Yeah, she, you know, we'll see her in her spin-off series, which is just her banging Jackie's dad
for like an hour and a half.
Like, just saying radical. It was also just like a weird...
Cleave loose, my bosom.
It was like a weird, like, you know, loose thread. Like, Jackie just says, "We've got nothing to... I don't know what to do with you anymore. So go see my dad, I guess, maybe. Bye." Yeah, and then, like, so Jackie's off doing all that with her new stepmom, the witch. And Dar wanders off into the desert, business as usual.
We get one sweet little coda where he stumbles across a little tribe of fantasy peasants who are gathered around Jackie's old sports car, worshipping it as if it's a god. And then Dar shows them how to turn the radio on. And they're like, "Holy shit, this is amazing." And they just start going, "Rock and roll, rock and roll." And the leader of this little tribe of rock and roll worshipping fantasy peasants is an actor who I love so dearly, whose name is Michael Berryman. Now, if you are unfamiliar who Michael Berryman is, you definitely want to do a quick Google image search for him, because he's got an amazing face, but he's perhaps best known for appearing in The Hills Have Eyes, the awesome Wes Craven movie. And he also shows up very briefly, I think, in Double Dragon that we've covered on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. I think he was, because I've seen him, like, he's in some episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, because I think they just got him in because they were like, this is great, we don't have to do alien makeup on you because you already look weird.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy. He's very, very cool. And he was apparently born, I'm sure it's not quite this, but I saw an interview with him where he basically said he was born without a skull. Basically the vast majority of his head is like a construct. It's like doctors had to build it. He had like a face and skin, but just no actual bone in there. And that's why his head looks quite unique. I'm sure that's not meant to be derogatory. I'm sure he would say that he's got a fairly unique look, and that's led in no small part to him having a lot of sick roles in like horror and sci-fi stuff.
And Beastmaster too.
And Beastmaster 2, I was very delighted to see him.
Yep, Dar just says rock and roll, and the film ends.
It sure does, buddy. It sure does. And how do you feel by the end of it?
I mean, it was exactly kind of what I wanted from... This was the film that kind of tipped the scales to us, like, watching the Beastmaster films, and this did not disappoint. Like, it's not like, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan... Yeah. Where there's actually very little taking of Manhattan. This is all of the rad 90s attitude you could possibly want from your Conan the Barbarian light movie. There's very little mastering of beasts. Dar does very little. It's like, yeah. It's Jackie and Arklon having like wacky, trying out wacky outfits. And
I like the movie as well. I think I like it in spite of Jackie. And because of Arklon, I really like Arklon.
He definitely makes the movie. Just weird that, like, I feel like in like the last movie, Dar is just like, he's just a cipher for stuff to happen. Like, he's not a character. He just kind of, you know, like, he's just like, well, we need to follow somebody, but it's going to be this guy, and his story is so kind of generic in the first one, and like in this is even more so. It's like, you have to fight your brother, you have no emotional attachment to him whatsoever. You're just going to be kind of like a B character in this, like,
and again, like, his ability to master beasts just doesn't really factor at all.
Like, not in a film where everything's fucking Ferraris and like...
Yeah, it would be the same movie if he was Dar the Punch Master.
Yeah,
and he was just very good at punching, or even mediocre at punching.
Yes. But still, you know, as an artifact of the time, I mean, it doesn't get more weird and 90s than Beastmaster 2, the portal through not time.
Yeah, yeah. So, Tom, I wonder, that leads me to ask you how you feel about approaching Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxus, from 1996. Because I would say that in some ways, 1991, that's basically the 80s still, right?
Yes.
You know, when you're watching something that's that early in the decade, that's still pretty late 80s. 96, we are in the meat of the 90s sandwich. This is going to be more 90s by far. So I don't really know anything about Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxus, other than I'm so stoked it's from 1996 and that it's got Tony Todd, a.k.a. the Candyman.
Yes.
In it.
Yeah, that's kind of all I know. I'm up for it. Like, I don't know. Like, I imagine you're right about like films like things like the early 90s is still essentially the 80s. So this will be like a very 90s take on like high fantasy, I guess, because I don't think there's going to be any of the kind of modern day trappings of this film. I'm just up for it. I like, you know, will they make Dar a more interesting character?
Because it does still have Mark Singer, the actor who portrays Dar, so in such a well-rounded way. So, we've got that consistent thread. Obviously, still no Don Coscarelli. And you could really tell that he was missing from this one.
Yeah. I think it's weird, actually. I think I was reading that the person who wrote the book, the Beastmaster book, actually took their name off of the first Beastmaster film. They, you know, like, they wouldn't have it, say, based on a book by... But it is on this one, which feels like, I mean, you know, like, I think maybe they must have done it for, like, more of a paycheck or something, because, you know, I can't imagine they would be happier with this film than they were with the original Beastmaster.
Well, the screenplay credit for this film is absolutely insane. So just in case anybody doesn't know, there's a way in Hollywood credits that you can tell whether or not two people collaborated on a script or worked on it separately. So if it says, screenplay by Todd and Tom, and it's an ampersand, that little symbol, that means that we worked on it together. And if it's Todd and Tom, the word and, that means we both worked on it, but separately. We didn't actively collaborate. Tom did a bit, and then I did a bit. There's five names on this. Two ampersands and one and. So basically the screenplay was done by a pair of people working together. Then it says, and this other pair of people with an ampersand. So they like took that script and went, we don't want to work with you, but we're taking your script. We're doing our own version of it. Then there is another word, and just one bloke who's just like, right, I'm taking this like recycled version of a recycled screenplay and I'm just doing it myself.
I was reading something about this where I think that maybe the guy who wrote it on his own might have been the first writer or like something like that, and it got taken away from him by, you know, the studio or maybe the director. Because this is like I think that the director of this has only done one film. Always a good sign. It's like the only directing credit they've got, but they produced the original Beastmaster. But I think that there was like some bad blood there, and like the original writer really like kind of held them over a barrel in kind of like when it came to like selling or distributing the film or something like that. And he was like, yeah, you wouldn't release this piece of shit. I'm going to need some fucking money. that's wild. I mean, you couldn't tell. It's such a coherent film. All characters are represented so well.
Well, listeners, that is the end of our deep dive into Beastmaster 2 through the portal, not through time. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope you're still well as ever. If you are listening, please do reach out. We would love to hear from you and just know that you're still out there. You're still okay during these strangely isolated times. You can find us on Twitter at BitterEndPod or on Facebook at BitterEndPod. Twitter, we probably check a lot more often than the Facebook, if I'm brutally honest.
Brutal.
We are going to be back soon with Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxus from 1996. Until then, I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. Stay radical, you rad dog dweebs. You're such an expensive girl. Ooh, so